From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. We await the big storm coming in, supposedly. Danielle Leva joins us today. She's the coordinator for Family and Pastoral Ministries for the Diocese of Sacramento. And John Watkins joins us, the director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. Good to have you both here.
Hi, Bob. Thank you.
Good morning. Good to have you. Sex ed. I guess that's the title of this of this program. John, why don't you tell us what's going on legislatively? What's going on in the schools and specifically public schools? Of which, as we know, even though we have great Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento, the vast majority of Catholic kids mm-hmm. are in public schools.
Yeah, I would say on estimate of about 80 to 85% right. of the children from our diocese are going to public school. So what happens in the public school matters to us. Mm-hmm. We're part of the community. This really has started back in 2015 with the California Healthy Youth Act, mm-hmm. Which was required curriculum on sex education to be provided in the schools right. across the state. And that law was signed into law in 2016. And then recently the state put out some recommendations wow. for curriculum. And I think that's where things really has gotten kind of squirrely, because a lot of the recommendations many of our parents find inappropriate, and right. and maybe I think they're right. And the issue here is that to a degree, the law does have rights for parents, as it should be. The parents have the right to be able to see the curriculum, and they have the right to be able to opt out. But there are some gaps in the law, and so the first thing that we're trying to do on the macro level is trying to strengthen parent rights, mm-hmm. and that's critical because. The parents are the primary the main educator for the child.
Says not right there in the catechism.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when school systems or any system sort of breaks the trust of our families, that's a violation, and it is a problem. And so we have right now a situation where many schools aren't adequately giving information about the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example, a story I heard recently with this woman who has a fifth grade child, a girl, and I have a fourth grader, so this resonates with me. And she wanted to know what the sex education curriculum was going to be. So she contacted her school district, as she's entitled to do, but the school district gave a very cursory sort of response, three lines, you know, this is what we're going to do. And she kind of pushed back and said, well, no, I want to know more mm-hmm. information. And so then they came back and they outlined sort of the thematic outlines, and then they put one line for each one of them. She said, well, this – I want to see what the curriculum is, you right. know, and I feel like you guys are hiding that from me. And the administrator was honest and said, well, actually, we are, because we found that when we show parents the curriculum, they opt out.
Wow.
Well, what are we doing here? Yeah, I mean, exactly. Are they hearing themselves?
Yeah.
First, we have to do what we can to protect all children across the state. And then second, we have to arm our own parents with understanding and knowledge about what is happening in our school districts. We want to sort of clarify things, because there is a lot of misinformation out there about the law. And so a lot of parents are afraid, and they feel that they can't do anything. And so we want to sort of straighten that out. And that's the next thing. And then the last part, which is really important, and I think this is something that Danielle has been very involved in, which is parents still have the responsibility. We all have the responsibility. The church has a responsibility to educate our children about sex because it is important. And so what we are doing is sort of the both. We're arming information for parents, and then we're arming them with information and resources about how they can talk about sex education with their children. So we're working with our teachers and catechists and the DREs, youth ministers. But ultimately, our intention is to get that information to our parents so that they can talk to their kids about sex.
And this is different than, I mean, we had sex ed when I was a kid in the public schools. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't as, extensive. And it wasn't. We didn't have all these "quote unquote" gender issues that we have now, and we didn't have almost like an enforcement of the way people have to think about all things.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost when you read it, it's almost mind control.
It is, and very subtly. And I'll give you another example. And this was many years ago, still probably about 10 years ago, maybe 10 plus years ago, when I was working at the homeless shelter, and I ran a teen program, and it was decided, not by me, but that we were going to bring in an outside group to talk about sex education, and a lot of misinformation in that. But one of the themes was that premarital sex is normal and good, that it's normal and good for kids that were present there, ages 12 through 16, to have sex. And sort of the assumption is everyone is doing it. And I did talk with the kids afterwards, and I said, listen, you guys, you heard that. But I'm another adult, and I'm going to tell you that sex before marriage, before you're older, is very harmful, and not just because of STDs. There's a lot of things, and we talked about that. And what the interesting thing was, half of the kids came up to me individually afterwards and said, you know, I'm so glad you talked to me, because I kind of felt really uncomfortable, because I felt like, I don't have sex, and I don't think it's right, but I kind of felt like I was kind of a loser. I felt like an outsider. And that's what's going on. It's not just talking about the science of our bodies. It's not talking about the threats of sexually transmitted diseases, many other things that are very important topics to have with kids, and all the biological changes that are happening to us. But it's the values and assumptions that are placed upon our kids on top of that these days that's the problem. And these days, yes, there's the sexual identity issues. All different kinds of variations of sex is all good. All sex is all good, and without any sort of sense of normalcy. So we're going to talk about, you know, the sex that creates babies. Well, we got to also talk about the homosexual sex, and it's all good. It's all the same. Yeah. It's not all the same, and that's a value judgment, and that's what is apparent. I don't want to subject my kids to. Right. That's my responsibility. And if that school district can't do that, then I'll take that back from them, and I'll educate them on sex education. So that's what this is about.
Danielle, tell us about your role in this, and how are you approaching this?
So John and I have been working very closely with this whole thing. And I think one thing that's really important to note is this isn't just public. It's public and charter schools, which is a big deal. And so one thing that we're really making sure is, you know, the church, especially the diocese, has a responsibility to properly resource our catechists, our teachers, our parents, DREs, CREs, youth ministers, and all of this. And so that's one of the things that we've been really working hard on is a workshop for those lay leaders, and also for clergy, on a response to this youth act, California Healthy Youth Act, what it entails, the bill SB 673 that's the hearing is today, that helps provide parents with transparency and really strengthen their rights in that situation, having an opt-in rather than an opt-out.
Right.
And so we've been, John and I have been working really hard on that, but also this workshop where we explain this bill or this law to the clergy and our lay leaders, as well as provide them with alternative resources that the parents can use, the DRE CREs can use, different kind of curriculum that can really provide an alternative instead of, okay, you opt your child out, but then what? It doesn't stop there because you still have this responsibility.
Right.
And so we're presenting them with a variety of curricula that's it's rooted in morals and theology that really strengthens their understanding of what sex is and how, you know, how it's meant, you know, the proper dignity of everything that we do.
Right.
And so that's been the huge project that we've been undertaking.
Yeah, you know, and there, this the notion, the difference between opt in and opt out. People, it's just semantics. It's no big deal. You still have this right. The notion that you have to affirmatively object, and you have to kind of raise some red flags and say, okay, you call attention to yourself, as opposed to saying, okay, I like this program, I'm going to opt into it. I'm going to let my kid be on the football team. I'm going to, you know, that's the kind of thing we're going to do, or in the choir, or whatever it is. It seems so, you know, in this great era of choice, it seems like that opt in is the proper thing for this. And even though we would still, as Catholics, have objection to this sort of curriculum in the public schools, even if parents are allowed to opt out, it's like, what are we doing teaching this? What are we doing teaching that this is just completely okay? And yeah, I mean, I have four teenagers I know about, and, you know, it's you know, and there's anti-bullying stuff in here, which is good. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of psychological bullying among teenagers when it comes to sex. Like, like you said, what's the matter with you? You're wrong. And a lot of kids get kind of sucked into it because they're being bullied in a psychological way. It doesn't fit the playground bully definition of bullying, but it is bullying. And it's so easy for kids to start a sexual relationship because they kind of got intimidated into it, you know. And there is correct me if I'm wrong, there is some local option here into terms of how this is administered?
Yeah, so this is one of the pieces of information that we're trying to educate parents on. So the way the law was written, and actually this is kind of a good common sense approach, is that each school district is able to implement this curriculum themselves. So it's going to be reflective of the community. So maybe a community, let's say in Chico, may look very different than the curriculum they may have in San Francisco or Los Angeles. And so so that's the number one, is that it's locally, it may look very different. But on the flip side of that, what makes it very difficult for us in the diocese to educating our parents is that, well, we can't tell them what is in their school district's curriculum, because in our diocese alone, we have 179 different school districts. That would be very difficult to be able to kind of comprehend or manage that. So the responsibility is on the parents to be involved in their child's education, to contact their school districts to find out what is in the school curriculum. What we're trying to do with this law is we're trying to make it easier for parents to get that information. We're trying to make sure that it's has the appropriate languages to communicating to the communities that are reflective of the school district. And trying to make it web-based so that it's very just click. You don't have to battle with the district to get something that is written in the law that is a right of yours. So these are the things we're trying to address right now. And it is a challenge, but these are the fights that we're going to, you know, we keep having to fight.
Well, you know, I mean, in this day of social media, it is so easy to put something online. The entire, and it's very clear they don't want that there because there's a, it's pretty stark. And the notion that I, as a parent, have to go down to the school district office, forget the time commitment and all that, and okay, and they're rolling their eyes, and here comes this concerned parent again. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to have to pull all this stuff out, and what a crazy guy. And, you know, just this call all sorts of attention to yourself because you care about your kids mm-hmm. and what they're teaching. When you just put it all online and let me look at it. Just
yeah.
let me look at the whole thing. Like you described, you know, one line, one,
yeah.
you know.
It's just about transparency.
Exactly.
And it's clear, and this is, we know this from our teaching, that when we are doing something bad, we generally hide.
That's right.
Right? And so we have to hold, regardless of what the issue is, we have to hold our institutions accountable to be transparent. You know, we do that now. You know, we have to do
right.
that for ourselves, too. We recognize that. But transparency is critical to ensuring the trust of the families. And if our institutions aren't able to do that, it really breaks down. And so this is just something that we need to correct in the system.
There's also the notion of there are lots of things included in this that like bullying and that sort of thing that they're trying to separate out and say, well, even if you opt out of the sex ed, you still got to go to this other stuff as if it's somehow separate. Explain that a little bit if you would, Danielle.
Yeah, so that's what's interesting is you have the opt-out only applies to this sex ed class, and they make it very clear that it does not exempt them from any part of history class that promotes any of the similar behavior or teachings. So that they were very clever with that. They did find a way to say, okay, well, you've opted them out of this class, but that does not mean that they are excused from similar content. That's in other subjects that they'll be learning it in.
Right, so. And... I get back to mind control. You know, I mean, there's we're all against bullying and we're all for inclusion and everybody is equal, et cetera. But there are some core beliefs of the church that when somebody says, no, we have X number of genders or whatever it is, gender seems to be one of the hot topics today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you believe this, it's almost like we're going to expel you or something.
Right.
You know, it's like that's wrong to believe this mm-hmm. as opposed to. And I mean, people still have arguments about American history, you know, and it's not something where, no, you have to believe this. But you see that in curriculum where we're going to go back and rewrite history a little bit here to make it mm-hmm. make it more this or more that. Sometimes that's well motivated and good. And sometimes it's sort of an attempt to craft the narrative into a certain political philosophy.
Absolutely. And you see that because they have to take tests after
yeah.
these lessons. So it's not just sit here and listen. It's remember what I'm saying to you and make sure you answer it right on a test. And then they also do an anonymous evaluation or questionnaire for the students to see where they're at in their sexual life. And their attempt is to better serve the students. But it's just something that no child should have to even be thinking about at this time or even have to be writing about to a teacher. It should be something that they should be discussing with their parents for sure.
Is the sex ed an academic course as well? I mean, is a kid getting an A or a B or a C or a D or an F in it? Or is it just almost like an extracurricular, like a PE or a...
You know, I can't answer that, but I can answer this or what we've seen is that in many cases, because this is a comprehensive program and because the teachers are sort of that had used to teach this might be usually the science
right.
Teacher or
right.
so on, because now it needs to be this comprehensive curriculum, what's happening is they're going to these outside organizations. And that's where we get into real big problems. We know we have Planned Parenthood involved in some of these, and other groups, they have sort of an ideological mission-oriented approach that is sort of is promoting an agenda, and they say, "Oh, we'll do it for free." Because this was going to be expensive for the school. Just thank you very much. Right. And so there's a lot of reasons why they want to keep these things secret. You know, because it really is serving a narrow group's interest, particular interest, and they're really not looking at the common interest of the families that they're serving. And it isn't just because we're Catholic. You know, the Sikh families might not be too happy. The Muslim families might not be too happy. And many other groups may not be so happy. We're not the only ones that we respect the diversity that is our community. And we expect our institution to not bully us. And that's what's going on here. It's a state-sponsored bullying because they have the power and they are trying to keep it. And they are trying to make sure that we, the parents, don't see what's going on. That keeps the power with them. And so we're just trying to sort of equalize things as much as we can because the power should be with the parents.
Absolutely. I mean, I can see the day where some kid raises their hand in class in the course of the discussion and says, well, you know, actually, I think abortion is wrong. And you're going to the office. You know, I mean, we may have somebody in this room who had an abortion. And you need to be sensitive. It's great to be sensitive to that, of course.
Can you imagine having that conversation with the teacher, quote unquote, from Planned Parenthood?
Yeah.
I mean, how are they going to lead that conversation?
Exactly. You know, and it's like you have to accept that this is a good thing. You have to accept that RU 46 is a good thing. I mean, we're now seeing it, you know, by law in our public universities in California. And to think that would be considered almost a violation of a code or something, you know, the principles of community or something, that somebody is against abortion, that's your anti-woman. And we don't allow discrimination in our school district, you know.
And not only that, but they're also showing them how, the teachers in the schools are there for the student and respect their rights. And so, you know, students can go and get an abortion without their parents even knowing, and they explain that to them. They explain to them those loopholes like that, and that's nothing a child should go through.
Well, yeah, you know, when at the start of this discussion, that is what ran through my mind was, you know, we believe, and even the state says the parents, they concede that the parents are the first and best ones to do the sex ed, but by law, if one of my daughters went to class and said to the teacher, I have a medical appointment. That's as far as it goes. Go. The teacher can't ask if she's got a ride, if she's walking through a bad neighborhood, or anything. And then I come to pick my kid up at school and say, oh, how'd she do today on the test? Or maybe it was choir. Did you guys have a good practice today? And she wasn't there. And the teacher can't even tell me that. The teacher's in the position of lying to me, either making up a say, oh, she did fine today, even though she wasn't there, or saying, I can't tell you anything, which would run up another red flag. The teacher is in the position of lying for the state, and my daughter has now gone and had an abortion and comes home and all the aftermath of that. And she's in her room with the door closed, and I don't know what's going on. Has she just got a bad attitude today, or is she having trouble with a boyfriend? Or I have no idea. I mean, if she had had an appendectomy, I would be saying, oh, you know, how's it feeling? You know, you're going to have a cute scar. You know, you'd be talking to them about their experience that day, a major experience. And yet here's one that the state has conspired to take us completely out of the picture under some misguided sense that we would be monsters about it or something. You know, it's just.
And that's the assumption. Obviously, that's the wrong assumption. The assumption should be that the parents have the child's best interest in mind. A. B, that they know better than the schools, and they know better than the system. They know what their child needs. And that's just common sense.
I mean, we've been with that child 24/7 since they were born, and the school district hasn't, and suddenly we've ceded all of it.
Yeah.
You know, and almost by law, parents are required to act in the best interest of their children. Yeah. I mean, we see, parents charged with neglect all the time, you know. And then to take that away and make the schools complicit in something as serious as abortion, if my daughter's in the choir and if they go on a field trip, we got to sign 42 forms and everything else, and the parents all have to be fingerprinted and that are going to drive and all that, and yet with an abortion, it's just go.
Well, you know, you can see what's going on here when you look at this law, this Senate Bill 673, which is the Transparency and Equity Act, which is really just trying to of Instruction Act, which is trying to empower the parents. Now, when Danielle and I recently went to meet with the senators, a Democrat who is on the Education Committee. Mm-hmm. We met with a staff person, and we understand that folks from the California bishops also met.
Right.
And they were, when they found out about this law, they said, that's kind of common sense. Uh-huh. Sure. By the time we met with them, they were a little cooler. Uh-huh. And why? Well, come to find out, there's a lot of particular interest groups that are have a lot of power. And a lot of particular interest in seeing the law the way it is. Yeah. And so what needs to happen, and I think this is the message for the listeners, is that if we don't do anything, we being Catholic parents and grandparents, if we stand on the sidelines and just wring our hands and do nothing, then we're complicit. We actually have to say, enough. We have to go to the school system and we have to say, I want to see that curriculum. Yeah. And if they give us not enough information, we need to push a little harder and we need to keep pushing, because this has been something that has been going on for decades now. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen yesterday. Right. It didn't happen last week. So that's what really the message of the bishops have been. When we talk about faithful citizenship, it is a lot more than just voting. Right. It's about being engaged in our local school system, our local elected officials, and making sure that they know that we're there and that we assert our values forward. Otherwise, we're ceding the ground to other special interest groups. Right. And then just things that seem to be common sense, all of a sudden, we're in Crazyville, which is where we're at right now.
Yeah, and you know, people should know every one of those 179 school districts has regular meetings, regular public meetings. Most all of them, I'm sure, have a time for public comment where you can get up. And I know it's not everybody's cup of tea to do that. And sometimes I think, you know, a lot of them are televised, which is a good thing, but I think it can also have people not testify because they know it's on TV. You know, they're nervous. They see the camera and all that kind of thing. But there's a great opportunity to do that. There's also a great opportunity to just, you know, call the superintendent, call the school board members who actually are over the superintendent and say, hey, I want to talk about this. Sometimes you might even run a candidate for school board. Mm-hmm. Convince somebody who's of like mind to do that. And you're right, though. I mean, this system, John and Danielle, that we have where lobbyists are so powerful, and it's partly they're there and they know which buttons to push, but also the great amounts of money that get contributed, and you've got a legislator trying to evaluate, even a good-minded legislator, which hopefully is not rare, is trying to evaluate a bill and what's the right thing to do. And here comes this group that donated $500,000 to his campaign. He's thinking, man, that money's going to go away. I might not get reelected. You know, and it's just, it's craziness. And then we've got us with our voices. But the thing that I've learned and I've heard from you folks and from the California Catholic Conference folks, it really matters when there's a groundswell, because the people who ultimately decide whether or not you're going to get reelected are the voters. And if they think, wow, it's 60 to 40 against me on this one, that can really sway them. But the other thing I've been told is go after your particular legislator. Let them know. Don't send it to the speaker or the somebody who's way up there and you think, okay, I'm going to influence them. It's by district. They're only afraid of the people in their own district, which makes sense.
Yeah, you got it. And one thing to also just sort of give as an encouragement and a little bit of guidance, you know, when you're trying to get influence and you're trying to affect the political change, this is a team sport. Yeah. So it's important to have these conversations with your community, with your friends, and say, hey, I know you don't, maybe you won't feel comfortable saying anything, but would you come with me to the school board right. meeting? And so we have to support each other in being the voice.
It's
too much. I'm inviting everyone to kind of go out and speak out, and it's kind of can seem scary and overwhelming, but it is if we do it alone. But if we do it together with our friends, the scariness kind of dissipates. I mean, significantly.
Whether or not there should be, there is strength in numbers. You know, it gives you. My dad used to when I was a kid. I remember he'd talk about all these courage. You know, he says there's no courage on the football field. There's no courage in sports. They're just that's games. You know, he says courage is you stand up in a room and say speak your mind when you know nobody agrees with you. He says that's courage. And as life goes on, you begin to realize those were true words. But if you got four or five or six of you there at the school board meeting or the city council meeting or in the legislature, maybe you're emboldened a little bit to speak your mind. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and not only that, you have four or five people, you actually have a little bit more power.
That's right. Yeah,
it is a numbers game.
The people on the other end are listening.
Yes. So you do want to have friends that you're doing this together with, and I think we're not alone. I think that I think we're right on the concerns that we're putting forward, and I think the common person would agree with us, and we just need to sort of excite each other enough to be able to wake up from our slumber and say, okay, this is enough. We got to stop this. We're the ones in charge, not you guys.
Yeah. And, you know, this topic, you know, sex ed and your kids and how the parental rights to raise them, it crosses all political lines. Parents, when it comes to their kids, tend to be very much alike, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or conservatives or liberals or what they are. We tend to all love our kids and want the best for them. And we get very upset when somebody tries to take away that from us. And so it's not, it shouldn't be at least a partisan affair where we've got to, depending on our political persuasions on other things, where we have to fall on one side or the other of this. And hopefully that will win the day. So recommend people to contact their legislators.
Well, a couple
on
things
this one. Yeah.
On this particular bill. So if folks aren't already connected to the California Catholic Conference of Bishops, then I would recommend doing that. So the first thing I would do is to go onto the website, which is cacatholic.org, and sign up to be a member of the network.
Right.
Where you can assert yourself. And obviously, this particular bill is going to be one of the bills that we're going to continue to push on and try to see be successful. But there will be others that come along with it. So that's one thing that, that we can do. The other thing to do would be to, I want to say, stay tuned, because what we're doing right now is very particular. The first step is to be educating the priests, the teachers, the administrators, the catechists. But our intention ultimately is to get those resources to the parents. Right. That's the most important thing. And so that's what we're going to be doing starting in February, moving forward, because we're preparing, because spring is usually the time when the sex ed classes are taking place. So we're ramping up, and we will have web resources and other sorts of resources available for parents.
Good. And with the network, you get regular emails of the issues of the day that the conference is looking at, the conference representing all the bishops. And it's really well done stuff. Mm-hmm. Explains the issues, explains both sides of the issues, and explains Catholic teaching very clearly. John, Danielle, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good to see both of you. Keep up the good work. It's it's not an easy world right now.
No, it isn't. Yeah, Thank you, Bob.
God's in charge.
Pray for each other.
Pray for each other, indeed. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand. Thanks for all you have done and continue to do. Bishop Wiegand's been retired for a long time now, and I guarantee you he's busier than ever. Just doing confirmations and filling in at Mass and just being around. Just
absolutely.
Great man. Lincoln Snyder joins us, the superintendent of schools here.
Yeah,
director
good to be
of
here.
Schools.
Yeah, you know, and I think I have to, you know, hopefully get a little bit of Bishop Williams energy to make sure I'm out there about staying
it's,
with the.
It's amazing. He just keeps going on. It's wonderful. I mean, to have two bishops. I mean, it wasn't that long ago before Bishop Quinn died. We had four bishops in this diocese. We had Bishop Quinn and Bishop Cotta and Bishop Soto and Bishop Wiegand. Just amazing. Well, a wonderful edition of the Catholic Herald. Are all the students in Catholic schools good looking, or what is it?
I think so. I mean, yeah, obviously biased, but
the Prairie Home Companion, you know, that Lake Wobegon, the kids were all good looking and above average or something.
No, we've I think the The timelessness of the clean-cut Catholic school student in a uniform is definitely one of those icons that I think
pretty. It really is. It stirs the soul when you see that image. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, but no, we're very happy with the Catholic Herald. I'll just put in a plug for our colleagues mm-hmm. across the hallway that publish yeah. our magazine. Really did a lovely job this year with our Catholic Schools Week edition of the Herald. So some tremendous articles. But I think the cover story is really, I think, very telling about why we do what we do, mm-hmm. talking about the difference that Catholic education has made for some of our young alumni in setting them on a trajectory of a life of community and service.
Indeed. We talked to Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald, and it's like, where do you find these people? It's amazing. And the focus of you know, the young, I guess, four young adults and what Catholic education meant to them.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of serendipity with testimonial stories like this one that, you know, you figure that Christian Brothers alone has had 15,000 alum in the course of its history, and that's just one of 44 schools we've got in the diocese. So at any one time, we've got 13,000 kids, plus minus, in all of our schools, preschool through 12. So I know that our colleagues at the Herald work very hard to find the right people to help us tell the story of Catholic education.
So did you help with this edition?
I did a little bit. You know, just to talk about process with this issue is that sometime in the late summer, early fall, Julie and my colleague Lori Power and I sit down and we discuss ideas. And, you know, Julie's the editor, so at the end of the day she has, you know, editorial right. control of the magazine. But she's very collaborative in asking us about the kind of stories we think would be good to tell for that year. You know, for us, having had this... We hosted a conference on a phenomenon called disaffiliation mm-hmm. about why people are leaving the church.
Right.
And I think that we all agreed that it would be good to tell the story of why people are engaged with the church. You know, for all of the concerns about broader secularization and what that means for us as church and as schools, we have a lot of really dynamic mm-hmm. young people that are choosing God and choosing Jesus and choosing church and leading. Right. And we thought it was important to talk about what they've gained and what they've given as perhaps a response to this broader narrative.
And a seemingly reliable study that said that the disaffiliation begins at age 13.
It does. Kids are asking questions.
Stunning.
Middle school. So, yeah, that's the median age. There's younger kids even.
Yeah. I mean, Well, maybe when they go off to college or maybe high teens, something like that, but 13. Like you said, yeah, and that's the median. That's the middle ground.
Absolutely. And, you know, and there's, it's not just about kids. People have been, something on the order of 60 million Americans have walked away from organized religion of all sorts.
Right.
Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, Muslim, since the turn of the century.
Right.
And by that, I mean 2000.
And it's not that they've swapped one for the other. Some have, but it's just walked away.
Yeah, you know, but there's good news in that, is that as we talk about this, very few of them, or a small percentage, I mean, it's still around a quarter, have left because they stopped believing in God.
Right.
Most of them haven't become atheists.
Right.
Most of them have left for some other reason, which I think is actually very good news, because we can organize around responding to the hungers that they still have mm-hmm. in their heart for God and for faith and for community. You know, we've got great answers to those questions, and I think that we just have to be or feel called to continue to evangelize
right.
to those answers when we encounter people who, you know, for whatever reason have felt like a church wasn't the right place for them at that time. There is an opportunity to open those doors and to welcome them home.
I think the number one thing I hear from people that have sort of faded away or walked away, and it seemed almost like gradual, but I wasn't getting anything out of it, you know. It's a tough one to answer, and there's some legitimacy. I think that is honestly their reason. They went there for some message or some inspiration that they didn't get.
Yeah, you know, so our host of the disaffiliation conference was a gentleman named Dr. Bob McCarty, and there's a great interview with him in this Catholic Herald. But, you know, people need community and need faith because there are fundamental human hungers that community and faith address and answer. And when people disaffiliate, often they've said, I didn't feel fed. And, you know, the good news and the bad news, it hasn't been any one reason why people have lost or have lost their faith or left the church. There's a lot of little reasons that add up to them just feeling dissatisfied on some level. But the good news is we have an opportunity to address that. You know, one of the reasons that I'm so proud of Catholic schools and my association with Catholic education is, I mean, we've got a very privileged relationship with these children.
Right.
That we have all school day, 5 days a week, plus retreats and sports and other opportunities to keep them anchored in the faith, together with their parents, of course, the parents being the primary educators in the faith. You know, I don't want to brag that somehow we're perfect. We could do a much better job of continuing to evangelize our youth to the value of parish life and why Catholic school is not about Monday through Friday. It's about Sunday through Saturday. But a lot of kids, even when they, you know, the stereotypical college student who perhaps drifts a little bit during a questioning phase, many of our Catholic graduates do come back and go on to send their own children to Catholic school. Because in hindsight, they've recognized the value of what was given to them and then reengaged. You know, it's it's a lot of fun to see kids I knew growing up with sending their own children to Catholic school now. Yeah, and what actually one of the greatest things about that is very often it's not the ones that if you had asked me to guess, you know, would that guy have stayed in the church and sent his own kids to Catholic school? I wouldn't have predicted it, but to see them enthusiastic about giving to their children what their parents gave to them, I think it's a very universal sentiment, and it's a lot of fun to run into people and have those conversations.
I'll bet. It must be interesting to be in the position you're in now and having gone through Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. It's been an interesting experience.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. You know, so my kids are at my old alma mater, St. John Vianney, and I'm sure that they'll, you know, having gone to a Christian Brothers high school, CB here in town, and then a Jesuit college, Georgetown, you know, obviously if my sons were to end up with either one of those esteemed orders for the next phase or phases of their education, I'd be tickled pink. And so,
you know, I'm imagining the parent-teacher conference, and here's the teacher, and the parent is you.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds a little bit like a Saturday Night Live plot.
I try to be very, I just, you know, one time I did wear a three-piece black suit to a teacher conference. I just happened to be in that, and I thought, oh, geez, I probably should have been a little bit more subtle. The next time, don't wear the three-piece black suit.
Yeah, put a bag over your head. You don't know who I am. I'm just an anonymous parent here.
No, I mean, we really do have a good collaborative relationship with our kids' teachers. You know, these are community schools and people wear multiple hats, not just me. And that's always a thing that we're never going to find our way around because it's about us ultimately serving our children in community with each other. And so, you know, there's a lot of multiple hats. But yeah, I always, my mother taught it. Christian Brothers High School when I was a student there and my brother was a student there. And so I've always been very sensitive to the fact that my children are now having a similar experience and that you know, as a senior, I didn't tell my mother anything about my social life at CB because I just felt like, you know, this is just way too uncomfortable otherwise.
Exactly.
So she tried to be a good sport about it until one day we were driving home and she's really quiet, so I know I'm in trouble about something. And she says, "You've been dating such and so?" And I said, "Yeah, for 3 months." Yeah, and I don't
and
know
I don't
about
know.
It.
Oh boy, you're in trouble.
Oh yeah. So, like I said, I get to pay forward that experience to my own kids.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you, Mom.
So we're gonna have Bob McCarty on the program next week, so people can circle that. I'll do my homework before talking to him. What a powerful speaker he is.
Bob's tremendous, and we're actually, here's a plug for Ministry Days, working to bring him back for Ministry Days next year.
He was here the last Ministry Day in September.
Yeah, he was. He offered a leadership workshop and seminar for us the day before Ministry Day started, to which we invited our principals and pastors and DREs and youth ministers to come together and all, you know, tackle this question of disaffiliation as a group. So we really had some very rich conversations. It's not often that we had school board members, people from the pastoral center. I think it was a really good opportunity for us to have everybody in leadership for all these different ministries within the church hear the same common challenge together. And so we've decided to invite Bob back next year this coming year, actually, for Ministry Days 2020.
That's right.
Then lead at Ministry Days so we can take that message for leadership and then make it relevant for our teachers and our catechists about what it means to them as evangelists. We're very grateful for our partnership with Bob.
Wow. Do you actively evaluate this data on disaffiliation and what we can do and how you approach in the schools?
We do. It matters to us very much. You know, we have, the statistics show that something like 35% of kids who graduate from a Catholic elementary school stay in the faith, and 39% of graduates of a Catholic high school stay in the faith, which sounds like pretty low numbers until you consider that overall only 5% of millennials are staying in the faith.
Wow.
They're young, and so a lot of people do tend to come back to the church as they get into their 20s, later 20s, 30s, marry, have children, etc. But this, you know, this in this new secular world, everything is kind of new for us, and so we can't presume anything about how this generation is going to behave. Just because Gen X or the baby boomers did something, it doesn't mean the millennials or the iGeners are going to do it.
Right.
We have that question of faith and engagement with faith. You know, we have most of our schools offer a parishioner rate.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption was always that mom and dad, you know, come to church on Sunday and they look father in the eye and shake his hand and he recognizes my name and he can say that they're the parishioner. But, I mean, Bob, this is a great question for him. We're going to really have to widen our definition or understanding of Catholic, not in a non-judgmental way, because people who are still even loosely tied to the faith are the ones that we really need to be proactive about evangelizing.
Exactly.
And we can't seem like we're judgmental just because mom and dad don't take Junior to Mass every Sunday doesn't mean that we should make them feel guilty about that. If the children are at the school, that means they're connected to the church in a really important way for their child, and we need to understand then just what's the next modest step we can take to engage that family to bring them closer and closer and closer to Christ.
Yeah, and so many kids nowadays, there's nothing for them to disaffiliate from.
Yeah.
They never set foot in a church. They've never talked about God with mom and dad. Some people will say, well, I don't want to, I'll let them decide that on their own at some point. When they leave the house, they can decide on that.
Yeah.
I know more and more and more seeing my kids' friends that there's absolutely no faith value there.
Yes, and I think that following up on that, you know, obviously the church has had to publicly acknowledge its sins, in 2003, and then again in the past year or two, and that's been and not to go into the abuse scandals, but obviously that's been a tremendous reckoning for us. But an important thing to understand about this phenomenon of disaffiliation, that's not the reason why most people are leaving. And so
No, it's not. It's not. Some people can use that almost as an excuse, like, I'm not going there. But it really isn't why they're leaving.
Yeah, so I think for us as the church's administrators and leaders, I think that clearly the care and the attention we've given to facing our sins and acknowledging our sins and offering atonement and making sure that it never happens again, and that we offer our children in particular a safe environment. I mean, obviously, all of these things were necessary, right, and good. We have to also remember that we have an obligation to meet people where they're at and find a way to respond to their needs, right, through the grace of the love of our Lord.
Right.
And that's what the data on disaffiliation suggests. It's not any one thing, and it's more people. Very often people will express it in very kind of, you know, millennial terms, like, well, I'm just over it. Or, uh-huh, yeah, there's, yeah, no one reason why they've left. They're just kind of done. And so I think for me, the grace of school is that the families are with us. They've made the choice to stay engaged with the church. And many of them go to church, but many don't. Mm-hmm. But I think for me personally as an evangelist, I really think that it's important to always be looking for that next step. How do we bring them a little bit closer and a little bit closer? And here's a retreat, or here's a parent meeting, or we're going to offer a prayer, or here's a reflection. Mm-hmm. The Education and Virtues program we've done is a tremendous opportunity for that, because we've got families talking about and reflecting on virtue in an intentional way, with materials for prayers before meals or stories to share with, sure, their kids. And so, you know, again, I think for us, we have to, in all humility, look for all of those opportunities to, again, take that next step.
Yeah, we had Father Monahan, I think it was.
From St. Ignatius.
St. Ignatius, talking about the Ignatian virtues and values, and 16 of them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they're big four: Magis, Cura Personalis, Examen. I should remember all of them. I was, like I said, a Jesuit college graduate, so.
Yeah. No, you went to Christian Brothers High School and you went to a Jesuit university.
Yeah, you know, I just, the brothers forgave me.
You're a mixed up guy.
I really am. I got,
you know.
which
virtue to follow.
Yeah, you know, the great thing about the orders and the Jesuit fathers have a tremendous framework for virtue that are particular, yeah, to that order, but really they're all universal for everybody, because
sure
ultimately
they're
about human happiness and how do you lead a well-ordered and balanced life. And so, I think it's great. As you know, as I discussed it with Father Mike, you know, he's somewhat jokingly said, well, these are all Dominican virtues, you know, because St. Thomas Aquinas,
sure,
was the one that said, well, he's still a doctor of the church the last time we checked. But you know, when you think of the Ignatian virtues, and they do have that schema of 16 virtues that are paired, this one and that one, and this one and that one. And so there's no way to go wrong. I mean, the brothers, you know, formed me in their 12 virtues of a good teacher when I was learning to teach. And I think that the important thing is that we want our children to be balanced. We want them to be happy. And if you think of success as walking that middle path between deficiency on one side and excess on the other, so there can be too much or too little of a good thing, and understanding that you always have to be intentional about what you're doing. You know, what I love about it, and I've been reflecting on this quite a bit since reading a book about cognitive behavioral therapy. And when a person's depressed, they tell themselves three lies. Is that I stink, the world stinks, and I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever going to change.
Yeah.
And I think that, not to make light of depression, it's a significant significant illness that obviously requires professional intervention and sometimes medical intervention. But I think everybody sometimes will find themselves, just as part of human experience, telling themselves one of those three things. Or all three of them.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about the Virtues program is we want children to understand that locus of control is always within them. Even when the situation is hopeless, you have the model of these saints or great Catholic thinkers have said, no, you always, because of that saving grace of your relationship with Jesus, that locus of control is always within you once you've turned to him.
Right.
And he's going to grant you that ultimate control through his grace that he's bestowed upon you. So, you know, I was really encouraged by the article about Father Mike and Patty Cochis, and our friends at St. Ignatius in the Catholic Herald.
Both a delight to talk to. And Lincoln, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Bob. It's a joy being on.
Thanks for all you do. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? But I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down, walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I question my ability to judge wrong from